What's up, guys? Welcome to the Establish the Edge podcast. I'm your host, Pac Terrain, and with me is my co-host, Mike Leone of EstablishTheRun.com. Mike, how's it going?
Going pretty well. In a couple of the startups I started this year in Dynasty, we just had our 1 week midseason trading period. It's best ball the rest of the time. So that was hectic and fun. So it's a good time for what we've got for the listeners for this episode.
Yeah, this really is like peak trading season. We just had that league that you mentioned I'm in as well. And it's an interesting format because there's just like this trade window that opens and closes. It just closed before the Thursday night game. It was open for about a week and it creates this flurry of trades. But even without that type of format, this is really the busiest time of a dynasty trade market. Maybe outside of the rookie draft, is we've got contenders and teams that realize they're out of the hunt, all trying to position their teams for either the playoff run or for next year. So what we did is we put out on Twitter, we just put out a call for dynasty trades that people are considering. Some people sent in ones that they have already made, but we're going to go through and just do kind of like a mailbag of dynasty trades and give our opinions on these, talk about some larger strategy points too along the way. But yeah, I've got in a Google Doc here a couple pages. I didn't bother to count how many, but we'll see.
Nine.
Okay.
We got a lot of questions.
All right. There's nine pages of of text. There's not, it's you know, I don't think it'll take too long. But we'll just kind of kick it off here with our buddy Cronzarito at Cronzarito on Twitter. Said, more of a general question. I've got a couple stars, Hopkins and Kamara, but my team may make the playoffs. Not a great squad, but in a position to sneak in. What kind of questions can I ask myself to determine whether I should sell and reload or hold for the variance of the playoffs? So, Mike, if you just had kind of a couple stars like Hopkins and Kamara and you're on the playoff bubble, how are you handling that?
Yeah, it's really difficult because I never like to punt on a team that can sneak into the playoffs, assuming it's a head-to-head playoff structure where you really can get lucky in a few head-to-head matchups. And, you know, winning and placing can be so important. You know, you want to have a good handle on the playoff structure, on the prize payout structure for sure. But if it's a standard league where you're paying out 1-3 in a 12-team league, for example, I think you probably want to hold steady and maybe make a small move or two to help you in the playoffs, assuming your probability is pretty good. If you're it is difficult because I'm usually get made fun of for being on team never middle, where I'm usually pretty extreme, where I'm buying quite a bit or I'm selling quite a bit. I hate being stuck in the middle. And if you put your odds of making the playoffs below like 60%, then I would probably sell Kamara. I think selling Kamara, and you had put in our notes that you'd sell Kamara to Pat if you weren't making the push for this year. I think you could probably get a pretty good package for him. I like banking the running back trade value when it's near its peak, and that's probably where it's at with Kamara right now. But if you were more than 60% to make the playoffs, I think you got to take a stab at your placing this year.
Yeah, Kamara needs to be on a playoff team. So if you're not going to make the playoffs, he just has such massive value. He's the number one player in all of Dynasty right now. And these types of seasons that he's putting together, they don't come around that often. I don't think we can really count on him to produce this type of season next year. I mean, he's certainly a good candidate to, but it's not like it's a lock that you're going to have this kind of season, even if you hold Kamara. So my preference would be, like you, Mike, to try to make the playoffs. I think I might go, I would be plenty willing to go a little bit more aggressive. What I would try to do here is be selling away my rookie picks to just make a push. Those rookie picks, some people might view them as pretty valuable since they may see that you're on the playoff bubble and they're like, all right, I'll bet against you to miss the playoffs. And if you can get pieces that are on the younger side, like if you can get a DeAndre Swift, Antonio Gibson, some of those rookie running backs that haven't totally hit their ceiling this year yet, but look like candidates to have like a David Johnson rookie year type of smash to close it out and really put you over the top. And then you have a huge asset. So it's kind of you're setting yourself up to have a win-win if you go for one of those rookie running backs, or you can go after some of these rookie wide receivers like T. Higgins, Jalen Reagor, who I still think are a little undervalued long-term and look like they could have some decent production down the stretch as well. Other guys to go after would be guys like Keenan Allen and Tyler Lockett, who are a little bit on the older side, but are having these awesome seasons. So they're definitely win now pieces. But they're tied to strong situations next year. They're both under contract. They both have good quarterback play. They're not going to like lose a ton of value. There's no huge downside risk that you're taking on by going after them. And the person who owns them now, if they're not in contention, may view it as a decent time to get out since they're, you know, going to be 30 in a couple years. So I think those are interesting ways to play it. But if you're just not getting any bites on, you know, some pieces to put you over the top for the playoff push, then I do think you should be shopping Kamara. I think you should probably be shopping Kamara now, at least, you know, getting a sense of what the market would be for him, because I think he's just too valuable to ride to nothing this year.
Yeah. And honestly, sometimes testing the market, that'll dictate which way you go, you know, instead of deciding where you want to go first and then pursuing the market that way, kind of see where the value is. You know, I've been in a couple of leagues where you can get a ransom if you're selling off. And I've been in other leagues where the teams that are buying, you know, just happen to be in a more leveraged position, and you know, they're getting some pretty good quote unquote buy deals for some picks that aren't super valuable, but you know, some of the selling off teams are just desperate for any picks. So it's always a good idea to test the market and be very aware of, as I said, not only your playoff structure and not the price structure there, but also, you know, what's the pick structure as far as, you know, are you going to gain some pick equity if you trade Kamara and your team kind of stinks a little bit? I mean, there's always that you want to outright tank, but you know, based on how your league determines the rookie picks for the next year is interesting. That best ball league we mentioned that we're in, Pat, it's best ball. So you can't, you know, obviously tank with your starting lineup or anything, but sometimes there is an incentive for middle of the pack team to get rid of a player and stop using those scores and stop collecting points to, you know, have a better draft pick the next year.
Yeah. And my personal philosophy on that stuff is you set your best lineup every week. That's if you don't, that's tanking, yeah. But you trade whoever you want to trade. And if you want to trade Kamara and get a big package of picks, that's part of the way Dynasty works. So, you know, as you've seen my team in that league, Mike, I don't have any players right now. It's all picks. I mean, I am tanking. It's a tanking team, but even if it wasn't best ball, I'd be setting the most competitive lineup that team could put together. So that's,
yeah, I think it's always good to make sure people are setting lineups, have incentives for that, or even, you know, sometimes there's a consolation bracket to determine who wins so that, yeah, you know, you're taking good care of your roster on the bottom. And the best ball also takes care of it a little bit. As you said, it's forced to happen via overall team strategy because you're not setting your lineup, you know, you're getting your best lineup no matter what. But I know most leagues are probably not best ball in Dynasty.
Right. All right. Let's move on to the next question here from I'm B Underwood at I'm B Underwood. Says FFPC Superflex and tight end, which is a tight end premium setting. He's 7-0, doing well in victory points, but he feels like this could be the time to sell Ezekiel Elliott. He's got Gaskin, he's got Kenyon Drake and Mostert. So if he does sell Zeke, he's going to need a running back probably. Could use some help at tight end. Is this the time to sell Zeke?
I don't think it's a great time to sell Zeke. I mentioned with Kamara, I like selling RBs at the peak of their value. You also want to be careful with aging running backs to sell them before their value drops off a cliff, but I don't think that's going to happen with Zeke and his contract in this situation. I think you'd be selling pretty low, you know, even with the struggles the Dallas offense has had the last 2 weeks and the injuries to the quarterback spot, the O-line spot. in the ETR rest of season rankings, we've got Elliott top 10. I think he's going to have a lot of value next year with Dak hopefully back. And, you know, the OL, it's not devoid of talent. You know, it's devoid of health right now. There are a couple guys out for the season like Tyron Smith that are really good players. I haven't checked, you know, the contract statuses on the OL guys, but imagine that it's certainly going to be an upgrade next year. You and your most recent update, Pat, I don't remember if this was pre or post Dak injury, but you had Zeke as still a top five asset, even if you viewed him more as a top 10, top 15 asset. I'm worried the trade market's really down right now on Zeke.
Yeah, I have Zeke lowered. And the next update, by the way, will be on Monday on the site, but I do have him as more of like a top 15 asset right now. But I went back and looked at some previous trades. I mean, I actually, in that quarantine auction league where, you know, this is again the team where I'm just totally tanking, I did have Zeke and I traded him away for, I got the 111 in, you know, a super flex, pretty valuable pick, 2021 first. I got a 2022 set of picks, a first through six, and I gave Zeke, Jonnu Smith, and Boston Scott preseason. So that was kind of
that's a big package.
It's a big package. You're not getting that now. I went back and looked at some trades. Now, this is an entirely different format. It's like a shallower 21 roster league with kicker and defense. So basically 19 skill players, not super flex. So different format. But I was looking at a couple trades there that went down this week. One was Zeke plus Ruggs plus Tony Pollard getting back Derrick Henry, Cooper Kupp, and Drew Lock. Another was Zeke for Nick Chubb in a first. Last week, you had one where they sent Zeke Gurley and Duke Johnson for J.K. Dobbins, Joshua Kelly, Ruggs, a first and a third. So you're getting back, I would say, considerably less than you were preseason. The move that jumps out to me as interesting is trying to get off of Zeke and onto Derrick Henry. I think if you're in a contending spot, that move makes sense. I do now have Derrick Henry ranked above Zeke. He's got the same contract protection that Zeke has. I think at his ceiling, you know, Zeke is going to be a little bit better of a running back to have just because of the pass catching potential. And the offense can be, I think, a little bit, can take him to, you know, higher heights if Dak is going to be coming back fully healthy. But there's a little bit of question about, you know, how serious this injury is going to be in terms of the long-term effects on Dak. So I don't have any issues if you can kind of, like this trade again was Zeke and Pollard and Ruggs for Derrick Henry, Kupp, and Lock. So you're kind of giving up, obviously you've got the handcuff equity there, and then you're also moving from Ruggs to Kupp and losing a little bit of future value potentially. But that type of move I like right now. And maybe there's some of these other veterans who have contract protection in place. If you're contending, I think those types of dudes would probably be decent targets. Joe Mixon comes to mind a little bit, even though I'm not a big Mixon fan. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, and I'm also looking at Dynasty League Football. They have, as part of their premium package, you can see some actual Dynasty trades. And I know that has me down a little bit on Zeke. You know, I'm seeing like Zeke for Nick Chubb. That, I don't know, that feels light to me.
That to me.
Yeah, I'd rather have
even Zeke. Chubb in a first. I think I'd rather have Zeke.
Yeah, and there's an interesting, you know, Zeke for Barkley, but you're talking about a team that's contending and you want to trade Zeke. So I'm with you. The Zeke for Henry thing makes a ton of sense to me. If someone's going to do it, I'm skeptical. Yeah, the market's there right now, but that might be the bubble I'm talking to. But
what would you, if you had the Henry owner listening, what would you be willing to add to Zeke to get to Henry?
I might throw in a third if I was really going for it this year and I felt that the upgrade from Zeke to Henry was a big deal. I mean, we have Henry third in our rest of season ranks. We have Zeke seventh. I don't know. Is that worth a third? But Henry, as you said, has the same contract protection. If it was a standard or half PPR league, I think I'd give a late third on that deal. I wouldn't give a second though. If it was full PPR, I probably wouldn't add anything to it. You know, Zeke's still getting like 12 to 14% target share. He's actually been used pretty well as a receiving back, you know, relative to the rest of the top backs, you know, besides like Kamara.
Yeah, I think a third is dead on. I actually would consider maybe adding a late second right now, but this also isn't like the best time to sell Zeke. You might as well wait a week. Like if you're considering adding that late second, I would say wait the week, see if we get anything better out of Zeke, because it was a really rough performance that he's coming off of.
And it's a situation too where, well, not just this situation, but in general, even you know, me and Pat who do this, who try not to overreact to things. I mean, I had deals 2 weeks ago I couldn't make for Christian Kirk that I can make because he scored two touchdowns each of the last 2 weeks. You know, his role didn't change at all. His role is exactly the same it's been, but he found the end zone twice in two straight weeks. So, it does make people feel better when they have a recent game log to lean on.
I'm literally writing down to send offers where I trade away Christian Kirk. That jumped out to me this week too. And I was looking at like, you know, he's literally had the same role for like the whole season and he was running really bad. And then now he's running really hot. So that's an interesting one. I don't think Kirk came up in any of these questions, but I think he's definitely someone to shop around right now. All right, let's move on to this next one here from at Igan LaFire. 12 team super flex league, half point PPR, half point per first down. This is a contending team currently in third place. So the trade would be trading away Odell Beckham Jr. and a 2021 third, which is going to be on the mid to late side, and getting back Chase Edmonds. So would you trade Beckham and a third to get back Chase Edmonds?
I think so. I'd try to maybe cut out the pick. I guess it depends how deep your rosters are too, because that's a huge consideration. You know, even if it's 12 team league, not all 12 team leagues are considered equal in terms of, you know, how many guys you can stash and for how long as to how important that third round pick is. I'm coming from the perspective of, you know, those third round picks still matter because I'm playing with 30 man rosters. If you're playing more like 20 man rosters, it's probably not a huge deal. We have Edmonds 31st in our rest of season ranks. And it's honestly, yeah, I kind of manually knocked him down a little bit from what the math said. The straight math has him as borderline top 15 if you combine Drake's rushing role with the receiving role that Edmonds already had. So there's a chance that he is really undervalued right now, which is why I was thinking maybe you could get the pick cut out of it. But if it came down to it, I would take the Edmonds side. I think he's going to smash the rest of the year. The hope is, it sounds like Drake's going to miss at least several weeks. And the hope is that Edmonds is just too good for Drake to come in and regain, you know, the carry share that he had early in the year. We were already thinking Edmonds might take it over even pre-injury.
I wouldn't screw around. You're in third place. And, you know, unless like the third round picks in this league or it's like a super deep league and, you know, that pick is going to be really valuable, I don't think that I would really even mess around with that. I would just take Edmonds. Drake is on the transition tag. This has not been a good year for him. I think he's probably moving on. Even if he comes back, maybe he comes back on, you know, a deal that it's clear that Edmonds is going to go be eventually the long-term starter there. I don't think Drake's coming back is the long short of it. So
how would you value Odell just in a vacuum?
Odell Beckham right now.
Anthony Amico is listening closely. He's a big Odell stan.
Yeah, I think Odell Beckham's about even just in terms of pure value with a late first round pick, I think. But I would rather have the pick.
Yeah. So I said I probably overreacted. I said at one point I'd be, you know, glad to get rid of him for an early second round. But
that's about that. Like where if I would consider giving an early second round pick for for Odell Beckham, but it would actually depend a little bit on the league. So like in these, in that format I mentioned earlier, that's like 19 skill players deep, I would rather have the pick, the early second round pick, because, you know, I have to use a roster spot on Odell Beckham for the rest of this year. It's one less. I mean, if you have an IR spot that you can stash him on, then I would have rather have Beckham. But it's like, what is the roster, the value of the roster spot that I'm now using on Odell Beckham? If I have a free IR spot that's open, then I'm much more willing to give the pick and stash Beckham. But if it's going to actually cost me some, like a meaningful waiver wire add, then I think I'd rather offload him for the pick. And I am noticing in one of my leagues, there's a guy who's a pretty sharp owner. He's just shopping the crap out of Odell, trying to unload him for anything right now. And that always kind of makes my wheels turn when I see sharp owners kind of moving off a guy. I wasn't that high on Odell entering the year. I traded him away for a couple picks before the season. What ended up being Rager and Visca, I got back for Odell. But that was pretty below market value when I made that trade. So I'm kind of the opposite of an Odell stan right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm just worried about, you know, if he comes back, plays one more year with Cleveland, it's a run first offense and he's coming off injury. And I know he's produced the last couple of years, but it hasn't been an incredible ceiling. So you're, you know, one year older, injury, not a huge ceiling probably that year. Then you're likely going to a new team. If you look at the way his contract is structured, it seems like you want to get the value while you can. And the flip side, Edmonds seems like a buy. As I said, he's really high in our rest of season rankings. And before he plays a game as the every down starter, I think it's a good idea to get someone who thinks they're selling high. And it turns out they're really not selling high because Edmonds is a smash.
Yeah, we have another question here from at Fender 494, who asked, he said he was offered a second and third, both late, for Chase Edmonds. This is a 12-team PPR Superflex tight end premium with 30 roster spots. And he's rebuilding, but none of that really matters because that's way too light for Chase Edmonds. I would not even consider taking a second and a third for Chase Edmonds, regardless of the format.
Yeah, I'm on Team Edmonds.
Yeah, I think he's worth a first now pretty easily, like a generic first.
I kind of wish I had sent some offers out for him now in some of my leagues.
Yeah, me too. I think I was probably – the thing with Edmonds that's so tough is that he wasn't necessarily going to have that much value this year, and then you're hoping that Drake does leave, which is a very, very real possibility. But it's – also possible that they then draft somebody. And right. Edmonds isn't necessarily going to be there long-term himself because last year is the last year of his contract, I believe. So it could be one of these situations where you're holding and holding, waiting for this value to unlock, and it never really does. But now it has, and that's a huge deal. So it's like we need to update the perspective that we're looking at with this, where now Edmonds is going to get a chance to show what he can do in the lead role. And if he runs with that, there are huge implications going forward, because now if they don't bring back Drake, they're probably less likely to bring in a guy to run ahead of Edmonds if Edmonds takes full advantage of this opportunity. So if you can get him for a second and a third or something, if you can be the guy who sent that offer, I do that all day.
And the other thing you mentioned with our very first question, but the guy wasn't sure if he should sell or buy, and you were saying, trade away future picks, but for guys that are going to hold long-term value, gambling on Edmonds having that long-term value, makes sense, because we know short-term the value is going to be really, really high. So that might be, so I think for buy teams, he's a really good, bet where you're going to bank the production this year, no matter what, over the next 6 weeks, it's going to be RB1 production basically until Drake's back, and hopefully it holds. And then, if you run pure on next year, it's just a huge amount of profit.
Yep. We had another question here, same league as before, which just as a reminder is a 12 team super flex, half PPR, half point per first down. And it would be Rager and a late 2021 first for kind of some wide receiver options. So he's saying I could potentially go after A-Rob, Adam Thielen, Julio. Mike, where are you at with a Rager and a late first package? What kind of wide receiver are you trying to get back?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough question. I think I'm just hesitant to sell Rager right now in almost any circumstance, just because someone that we were super high on in the preseason, he's going to have a lot of opportunity. You know, there's, you know, DeSean Jackson's out for the year. Zach Ertz is out. I know Fulgham has emerged, but if Rager's anywhere, you know, where we think he's going to be, the target and the opportunity is going to be there for a team that's got a pretty good pass offense schedule. He's not going to see targets like some of these guys mentioned, Allen Robinson, Adam Thielen, Julio Jones as potential options, but I'd be really hesitant to ship him in a first for one of those guys who's, you know, especially in the case of Thielen and Julio, you know, you do start to doubt how many years they have left in them.
Yeah, and I would not underestimate Rager's ability to contribute to your team this year. We right. have been stashing him in our Football Guys Players Championship Leagues. We stashed him in the main event. We had drafted him in the main event and ended up having to drop him for running back help and just spent over 200 in fab to get him back in a main event team. So, you know, these are high-stakes redraft teams, and we're trying to get as much Rager exposure as possible. So, you know, from the fact that you're contending, I wouldn't let that weigh too heavily as you're shopping around Rager. This is a really tough time to trade away Rager in Dynasty. And, you know, I think someone that could end up having quite a bit of value for your contending team.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, in theory too, if you're contending while having had these Rager 0 weeks too, mm-hmm. you know, you're adding to that already. You know, I don't know the exact complexion of the team and your ability to start Rager right now, but you know, you've survived without him this long. You know, how much utility are you really getting improving upon Rager? When Rager, as you said, is someone that, you know, we're pretty optimistic on rest of season, despite, you know, the injury issues early on.
Yeah, and John Hightower has been keeping his role warm for him. I think he's going to come back in and play all those snaps and get a lot of deep routes, but also be involved a little bit more shallow than they were looking to include Hightower, because Rager is just another class of player. I have him pretty close to Adam Thielen and Julio in my dynasty ranks. I have those guys ahead of him, but it's not by much. So, you know, the idea of adding a first to Rager for one of those guys is just something I'm not interested in at all. I would consider doing it for Robinson, consider making a trade for Robinson. I would not add the first, though. I'd only add a second there. And even then, I don't love it. If I'm trading away Rager in a first, I want AJ Brown. I want like a stud.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, let's move to our friend of the show, Sam Hoppin, who said someone's been trying to get T. Higgins from him since the preseason. Could use some running back depth, but this guy doesn't really have much running back depth, so it would probably be for a pick. And it's an interesting team because they have 6 2021 first-round picks. One of them looks pretty valuable. What's a fair asking price right now for T. Higgins, Mike?
Yeah, I think you had put in the notes that you'd want a top three pick here, you know, yeah. for T. Higgins. Yeah. And I don't know if I'm quite there, but I'm pretty close. I pulled back up, you know, just for my own reference, the Google sheet I did when we did the episode on what picks are worth, because I think that affects these trades quite a bit. And in general, the last 4 years, a middle one is about 50th in startup ADP. Which, Pat, you have Higgins, I believe, right at 50 or right around there. So I'd want at least a middle one. I don't know if I'd have to have, you know, if I had a middle one with upside for top three, I would take it. I wouldn't need the, you know, the same confidence as you that would have to be a top three pick, but I don't think we're too far off. And it's an offense that has a young quarterback that has some really good metrics early on. I know Pro Football Focus was noting some of the stats that Burrow has been able to put up while under a ton of pressure has been really impressive for a rookie. We've also seen them run at a fast pace. and be somewhat pass heavy, maybe not as pass heavy as their attempts indicate, because they haven't been very good and their expectations been high. And you know, if they're better moving forward, they won't be as crazy pass heavy, but it's certainly a good sign. And then moving forward, you know, you got to think AJ Green is not a part of the picture. And T. Higgins has been able to realize value right now with a three-headed monster at receiver. You chop one of those heads off, you know, the upside gets completely unlocked. I mean, we're already seeing him hitting some upside, but it's even higher than what we've seen.
Yeah. AJ Green's on the franchise tag, and they play a very similar role, more of the downfield role. So if Green is gone and it's just him and Boyd, then obviously it makes sense that Higgins would take on more of the Green type of role, since he's playing that role in the offense. Like, he's probably getting more of the valuable targets than Boyd. And the thing with Higgins, as you say, like, based purely on the value of where I have him ranked, the value of the pick, he is probably about worth a mid first. But what I'm having trouble with, if you know, with the idea of trading away Higgins, is that he does profile as someone with just a massive ceiling. He is a true underclassman. He did not have the type of production that we wanted to see, but a very strange college profile where he was on such a good team that they didn't really need to rely on him. He wasn't always out there for even the full game. So you're potentially being tricked by the numbers here with a player like Higgins. And I think that lowers his floor as a prospect, but also raises his ceiling from the typical, you know, non-productive underclassman. Now we have the very high draft capital with him, and now we have him producing right away, tied to a quarterback who's also a highly drafted rookie who's producing right away, and the potential for a lot of targets to become unlocked heading into next season. So at the very least, I think he's going to be a very trendy player next year if Green doesn't come back. I think he's going to be one of the most coveted assets. And I think you'd have no problem trading him for a mid-first in most scenarios during the draft. Like, if you want to move off Higgins for a mid-first in March or you know, ahead of the draft or during your rookie draft, I don't think you'll have any trouble doing that. So I think at this point, if I don't get to a chance to realize some of that upside, I really would want a top three rookie pick.
Is he a grown ass man? Is he a gam?
He is a grown ass man.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, is he not for you, Mike?
No, I think he is, but that's Andrew Wiggins and Drew Dinkmeyer every week when I do our DFS projections. They want me to completely bury AJ Green because the AJ Green is a TGFS. This guy
fucking
effing sucks. And
I'll put the explicit tag on it. It's all right.
That's a Wiggins acronym there. And they firmly are on Team Gam with T. Higgins. So I had to ask you that.
Yeah. I'm on Team Gam. All right, let's get to the next one here from at JDSDog10. This is a 10-man half PPR league where he has, it looks like that he's trying to gauge Calvin Ridley's value here. So asking if this would be too much for Calvin Ridley. Godwin, Juju Smith-Schuster, and some late picks here, but they're both first. A first in 2021, a first in 2022, plus Godwin, plus Juju, all for Ridley. This was asked before Ridley's injury, but where are you at on that, Mike?
Yeah, that's way too steep for me. I do understand that in a 10-man league, 7 bench spots, you know, you're more cognizant of making these upgrades to your starting lineup. You care less about depth. Even that considered, I think it's too much. I know, Pat, you before the Ridley injury, and it sounds like it's going to be pretty minor, you bumped him all the way up, I think, to wide receiver 1 in your dynasty ranking. So, you know, you're very high on Ridley, and I think that makes sense. But it seems like you're really selling low on Godwin, you know, because he's had the shaky start. But when he's been healthy and in there, he's been the top targeted guy for Brady. You're selling low on Juju, who just finally showed signs of life last week. And one thing we've discussed too, those 2022 picks, you know, they seem like they're going to be a late pick and bad, but you do want to be careful shipping out picks more than a year away, where, you know, a couple wrong injuries to your team or something, and all of a sudden those are really valuable picks, which seemed like throw-ins and afterthoughts at the time. So, you know, it's too steep for me. I'm trying to think how I would change this deal. How would you change it to make it, you know, less steep, but something you would execute?
Yeah, I mean, if the Ridley owner wants that type of package, then I don't know, because I just don't think you need to add, like, you're adding at least a first too much. And then you can argue about, is Juju Godwin and a first too much for Ridley? And I think it probably is a bit, but a second might not get it done. I don't know. I think the injury should definitely get that done. I think I would go talk to the DK Metcalf owner and see if you can do Godwin and Juju there. Because that, I think, is a lot more appealing.
Yeah, that's definitely more appealing. At the very least, I'm stripping off the 2022 first, which I said, you know, I think you want to maintain some optionality with that pick, you know, in case something happens to your team and goes wrong. I do get the urge to make a big wide receiver upgrade in a shallower league, get the top potential dynasty wide receiver asset. Like, I get where you're coming from, but, you know, you still want to leave yourself out. Injuries and busts and stuff are going to happen. So having two guys like Godwin and Juju, I mean, they're young guys that at one point in time, these guys were arguably top five dynasty wide receiver assets. And I think, like, you know, if you can get them Metcalf for the two of them, fine. But yeah, I wouldn't jump ship on both those guys and a first. I mean, that's too much.
Yeah, I think a first both those guys is too much for Ridley. All right. At Drive One and Manager says 14 team super flex PPR, 25 man rosters, start 10 players. This is a contending team. Would you give up Brian Edwards to get Devontae Parker?
I think it's a pretty clear yes on a contending team. And I wasn't super high on Brian Edwards going into the offseason. I think he was he like a late two in a lot of startup drafts? Maybe even.
Yeah. I
thought an early three.
In terms of rookie picks?
Yeah. I mean, this was obviously a very deep draft, but I don't think.
You'd sometimes see him in that mix right after, right after around the 206. There was kind of that tier drop, and you'd see him around the 206, 207 sometimes, but then sometimes falling into the early third.
Yeah. So, and it's not like we've seen a lot from him. He's been banged up. When he has played, he was barely targeted. It's, you know, you've still got Darren Waller there for at least another year. You've got Henry Ruggs there. You've got Mr. Checkdown Derek Carr. I feel like the chances that you're really kicking yourself on this deal are kind of small. And Devontae Parker is, you know, a true number one receiver with a really good skill set, a really athletic, you know, kind of like this prototypical high upside wide receiver. You know, we'll see. There's some uncertainty with Fitz being replaced by Tua this year, but I think these are the types of moves contending teams should make pretty easily.
Yeah, and Parker is, I would say he kind of fits in that class of wide receiver that I mentioned earlier, kind of a discounted version of like the Keenan Allen, Tyler Lockett type of receiver. He's an older player. But his contract, unless he completely flames out and they cut him, which is something they could consider doing, but his contract is through the next few years there. And now you have a rookie quarterback coming in, and we could see that offense, you know, even take a step further, step forward from where it was with Fitzpatrick. So it's certainly possible. You have some upside, and you have the upside for people to be more excited about owning pieces if Tua shows really strongly here to close out the year. So this is a pretty clear yes for me too. I never was really that on Brian Edwards. I don't think he's a terrible prospect, but not like a super strong prospect. And someone that you could be holding for a number of years before he really starts to give you much production. So I'm definitely on the Parker side here.
We have a question later on about, you know, how aggressive should you be buying or selling? And Yeah, I guess maybe we could go into that one right now, because this question just makes me think of that, where you're in a situation where, again, a guy was a late second startup pick, has done nothing this year to change that. If anything, you're maybe even a little down on him than you were. Like, you can't be afraid to trade that type of player when you're in contention mode for, you know, not only a legitimately good receiver, but as you mentioned, Pat, it's not someone who's dead in value for next year. You know, I'd be willing to trade Bryan Edwards for probably some guys that maybe, you know, I know you don't like taking on any of the aging veterans kind of like at pretty much any cost, but, you know, I would be pretty aggressive buying where I think Parker's actually like a pretty strong get. You know, there are receivers with less future upside that I would take in this situation. So when you're in contention, and again, all the caveats about payout structure and playoff structure matter a ton, but I look at in the league we're in, Pat, 16 or 12 team league, top three get paid out. You know, you win that league once, it's $600 off $100 entry fee. You know, you've paid for your entry fees 6 years, you know, if you win one time. And I know with Dynasty, it's fun to build a dynasty that lasts forever and is just a strong team year in and year out. But hey, flags fly forever, and so does the money. The money won't, I guess, doesn't fly forever, but it'll let you free roll a rebuild, which you might not even necessarily need to undertake.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think a guy like Edwards is someone that I'd be very comfortable trading away for kind of a dusty veteran type if you needed to, but Parker isn't that guy. Parker actually could be worth more in trade value this time next year than he is right now. It's pretty easy to see a path to that. So I think Parker for Edwards is kind of a no-brainer move. And yeah, I think you could get a little grosser with it if you needed to. But so this one's from our buddy Anthony Amico, who is like specifically asking for trade advice in the quarantine auction league, I think. So he asked, I'd love to hear you guys just discuss strategy when in contention. How aggressive is too aggressive? Mike, where are you at on that?
Well, I was saying Amico doesn't have to worry about being too aggressive. I was giving him a little bit of shit there just because we're in this league where I felt like all of the people that were in contention were really penny pinching in terms of buying. And there's some bias there as well, not in the quarantine auction. We have another league that's like the exact same setup that Amico's also buying in, and I'm a seller in that league. So this is a league where I was really trying to sell James Conner, and it was tough sledding out there. You know, I got offered I ended up trading Conner after badgering Amico enough times. I broke his will down, and he took Conner for a late second, 2/4 and 2/5.
Okay.
Previously, the best I had gotten was a late second and Keyshawn Vaughn, which, you know, end of the day, maybe I take just because I don't want Conner on my roster accruing points. I want a better draft pick. And there's some risk next year that there's a lot of risk next year that he doesn't re-sign with Pittsburgh. And then, you know, who knows with a running back? You just don't know. But I do think sometimes people are a little too risk averse. They want to be greedy where they want to win now and keep it for the future. Something I can wrap my head around because I like to be greedy. The big thing is understanding the utility added when you're making these trades. You know, how much is it moving the needle for your ability to win the championship? I feel like being an aggressive in these really deep best ball leagues we're in makes sense because there's a good chance those scores really matter. You know, it makes your team really robust. But if you're in a shallower league, if you're in a non-best ball league with like regular starting roster spots, maybe you don't want to give anything for James Conner because you're just not going to start him or the marginal upgrade over your starter is not that much. So you know, the format matters a ton and from that, the utility that you're getting, you really have to understand what it's doing to your roster, what it's adding, if anything at all.
Yeah, I don't think you should ever really be aggressively pursuing these veterans like Conner on expiring deals unless like you have a real hole there. but it's not a good way to be like, I'll just add some strength to this already strong team. Like, if you're already that strong, you don't need Connor, and that value that you're giving up for him is likely to be better. You know, it's not that you need to draft your first round pick, but that first round pick is not going to lose value. It's going to gain a little bit of value before the draft. It's going to gain a little bit of value sometimes during the rookie draft. If someone falls to you, you can always get off that pick if you want to make a deal later. If you're really feeling like you need that extra firepower right now to make the playoffs and win the league, by all means, but I wouldn't just kind of add pieces to add them.
Yeah. Again, the utility matters a ton. And this is where, you know, it can be difficult to make deals. I feel like a couple things are going on here. One is a lot more logical than the other. The one that I think is a little illogical for people is we're coming off a historic rookie draft. You know, and again, you're deeper into how many seasons you've played Dynasty than me, but it feels like I understand why people are tethered to their picks right now who are buyers and contenders, because they just saw Chase Claypool go at the 2-3 turn. You know, they saw Chenault go in middle two. They saw CeeDee Lamb go at 108. You know, I understand why these people, you know, Justin Herbert and Superflex went 110. Like, it was nuts, right? But if you take a broader picture, you know, a mid to late one startup ADP, that's like 80, you know, a mid second, that's 125. That was Jamison Crowder and Kerryon Johnson this past offseason. So that's where I think people maybe are being a little illogical. Where they're being logical and where these things aren't one-to-one comparisons, and you've made this point, is the optionality of the pick probably makes it worth more than just translating that to the startup ADP. You know, you've got a mid to late one, or I've got a mid to late one worth about 80th in startup ADP. You've got James Conner in your dynasty rankings ranked 63rd. I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison. You'd slot the mid to late one up even higher than what that average startup ADP is based on the optionality and the things you can do with it. But I am kind of curious, you know, if you were to slot in rookie picks, you know, where would you slot in, you know, a late one compared to James Conner? If you were to rank in your dynasty rankings, just the 112, you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we got some questions like this from people kind of just saying, can you just give me a better sense of the dynasty trade market for rookie picks? I actually made some notes on that. So yeah, I was looking at players that I would trade like a late first for, or about even with a late first. And I do think it's guys like Devontae Parker. I think Zach Moss are kind of in that range. And Connor's not far off those guys in my ranks. The problem with Connor is, like, I don't know, you get to these points, like the ranking the players versus ranking the picks does become hard. I also think it matters about the number of roster spots that you have, the number of flexes that you need to fill. Because if you have a bunch of flexes that you have to fill and you take on a James Conner and James Conner does not re-sign, then you are going to be really up a creek, right? You can't lose a player with that much value to fill one of those flex spots and have, you know, given up a first to do it. So with Connor, like, I have Connor over Parker, but I think I would be more willing to trade a pick for Parker than I would for Connor. Maybe I just need to lower my ranks on Connor, but
it's a really hard thought exercise. And of course you've got people like me who are like, Pat, what about this in your rankings? What about that? And people do that to me. And I'm like, guys, it's an art, not a science. And Dynasty is so complex. I mean, you've got different league sizes, different starting rosters, different bench sizes, and it all makes a pretty meaningful difference as to what things are worth. You know, I'm in a league where, you know, fourth, fifth round picks are actually, you know, somewhat meaningful. You know, there's other leagues where those are legit throwaways worth absolutely nothing. And I think that's what makes Dynasty so fun, is that you can have these different evals. But, you know, your general point, I think we were talking about guys like Parker and Zach Moss, is you'd rather bank a little bit of short-term value and hold some long-term optionality versus someone like Connor, where he might rank a little bit higher because, you know, rest of the season, he's borderline top 20 player, quite frankly.
Yeah. But
it's going to drop off after that.
Yeah. And to defend the rank and make the bull case for Connor a little bit, if you need a running back and if you're in a shallower league where that running back starter can really make a bigger difference, you know, there's less starting players, less starting spots that you have to fill. And so each one is more important. Then I think he's definitely is worth sending a late first for, because kind of goes to the point we're making earlier of like, you're in contention and you have a chance to put yourself over the top this year. However, I think we might also be underestimating some of the upside of if he resigns. So you do have an out there. Like, there's risk to it. It's not like you're sending, I wouldn't send a first for Todd Gurley.
Yeah.
Like, Todd Gurley's not coming back. He's turning to zero. James Conner, you have some outs with him. He can re-sign with Pittsburgh. He can go get a second contract with the Jets. We know that he's going to be dusty, but someone might be willing to trade you for him, and you can recoup some of that value at that point. So I think that in the right circumstances, I would be comfortable sending a late first for Conner. I wouldn't necessarily want to send a late first for Devontae Parker in a league where I don't have so many flexes to fill, and I feel like he's going to be on my bench most weeks. I don't think that would necessarily be a great trade to make. However, if I needed the flex help, it's a little bit of a deeper league, and I like the fact that Parker's signed there next year, then I think it would be a good move to send the late first for Parker. So it depends a little bit on the league size, what your specific needs are, but I think that Connor, Parker, Moss, I think Daryl Henderson are all kind of in the range of like the late first. I was looking for guys like at a mid first range. To me, it was, I think, like, again, dependent on situation, league size and stuff, but in my ranks, Kareem Hunt, Darius Slayton, Juju Smith-Schuster, Tyler Boyd, Robert Woods all kind of look like mid firsty type of values. Some of those situations, you'd be really psyched to get a mid first for Robert Woods. I think in some cases it's defensible to send it out. I would, yeah, for an early first, if you're not contending, I would be very comfortable sending away like Will Fuller, Deontay Johnson, Julio Jones, Nick Chubb. And you could, guys to try to target if you are trying to trade away an early first, I had is Mark Andrews, Kenny Galladay. And you could even argue Aaron Jones, although you're taking on a fair amount of risk because he's not signed for next year, but kind of a premium version of the Connor asset.
Yeah, and you know, there was another question from at FF Outliers that I think makes sense, piggybacking off James Connor, and it was, what's the least you'd take for David Montgomery or Chris Carson as an injury-bitten team that should be back in the mix next year? And you know, the kind of somewhat similar spots, you know, guys that are, you know, Carson's dealing with the injury, so like assuming he's okay after this week, yeah, I'm going to answer that as if that's the case. Similar spots where these guys have a decent amount of value rest this season. They're not totally dead for next year, but they're both scary. You know, they're guys that could fall off cliffs. They haven't been, I guess Carson's been pretty good, but you know, he never had a huge pedigree, and you know, there are a big mix of backs there in Seattle. And then David Montgomery is getting all the workload right now. It looks great, but that's with Tariq Cohen out. You could easily see especially the passing down role for David Montgomery scaled back again next year when either they have, you know, Tariq Cohen or a passing down back or whoever, or they draft someone. So somewhat similar to Connor. So the least you would take late first, you know, you and I both answered as a pretty clear yes. We'd take a late first for one of these guys as a non-contending team. What about a mid second and a mid third?
I said I would take that for both of these guys.
I couldn't say that I wouldn't, because I just took a second and two fourths and two fifths for Connor. So I guess I'd take the second and the mid second and the mid third. So I was at a point where I was really getting nothing in these deals where I thought maybe I'll hold Connor and maybe I get lucky next year. Because if I get lucky,
yeah,
and he resigns in Pitt, like I felt like I was close to that point, but I did take the deal I took. So I have to say yes to mid second and a mid third. And then it was late second and mid third. I guess I have to say yes, because I essentially took that for Connor. And I think, you know, Connor is a better rest of season player than Montgomery or Carson.
In most situations, I would just hold with these guys, particularly with Montgomery, where he's going to be there next year. Although, God, he looks so bad. So I don't know. You could probably talk me into it. I really don't want to be holding Carson or Montgomery. Montgomery, I think there's real risk that they draft someone. He was only a third round pick. And if they draft someone, I think he's going to turn to dust very quickly. It's going to be a kind of Kerryon Johnson situation where he's going to be an afterthought. He'll get drafted and redraft in like the 11th round as, you know, a potential zero running back guy. But then most likely he will ultimately turn to a zero. So I would be trying to get off these guys. It can sometimes be really depressing to have to trade away guys like Carson and Montgomery for really cheap, and you just feel like you are trading them away for pennies on the dollar. But I think ultimately it's usually wise to get something for these falling knives, which, and I think both those guys fall into that category, with Carson probably not back in Seattle next year, I wouldn't think. I did on the Connor thing, and kind of closing the loop on Anthony's question, me and Anthony made a trade as well for Connor, actually. So I sent him James Connor and Aaron Rodgers for Denzel Mims and Ryan Tannehill. So this is a super flex league. So that quarterback upgrade was pretty nice for me as a non-contending team. I did like that deal. And also, Anthony just traded for Rob Gronkowski. So he's now traded for James Connor in multiple leagues and Gronk. I think he's plenty aggressive enough.
Back off. He's paid pretty good prices on his deals, though.
No, it was actually a good deal for Gronk. It was totally fine.
I bought Gronk in a league. Oh, no, I sold Gronk. I sold Gronk in a league. I think I sold Gronk in a six to get a third. I was just like, get me anything for Gronk. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Gronk looks kind of good now.
I know. I was like, and that, you know, we were talking about, you know, Zeke and waiting for one good week, and Christian Kirk too. It is kind of crazy. Like Gronk's dust. Two good weeks. You know, it's kind of like the kombucha gif there.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, he's getting targeted downfield. You know, he's actually getting decent target volume. I think OJ Howard getting hurt helped him. So I don't hate adding Gronk in a tight end premium format for a contending team, as much as I want to give Amico crap for doing it. But let's move on. There's some trades here that were already made from at J Mystery Z. Made two big trades in a 12-team PPR Superflex with 28-man rosters. He traded away Chris Carson in a mid to late first. Sorry, Chris Carson for a 21 mid to late first and Tim Patrick. Where are you at on that?
Yeah, I think we're both pretty clearly in favor of that trade, given what we've said. You know, if he's recognizing the injuries, he's not going to contend. First round pick for a running back like that seems like a no brainer. And then, you know, you free roll whatever happens to Tim Patrick, even though it's probably absolutely nothing.
Yep. And then he also traded Big Ben, Tyreek Hill, a mid to late second and third for Deshaun Watson, Zach Ertz, and a 2021 third. Same deal, super flex.
Didn't like this one as much. You're worried that Zach Ertz is just basically a giant coffin at this point. And, you know, if you're not contending, you know, like I understand Deshaun Watson in super flex is just massive value, but you're still giving up a quarterback and a really high end asset in Tyreek Hill for the right to get him. So I think you gave up a little bit too much, but I won't kill you for, you know, getting Deshaun Watson in super flex.
I felt the same way. I think it's fine. You have a really nice stable asset in Watson, but I do prefer the Tyreek side in a vacuum. Is it time to give up on Lynn Bowden and Dynasty from Blake Schultz?
Yeah. I don't he was kind of a lottery ticket to begin with, and we just haven't seen anything of that. I wouldn't lose sleep over cutting Bowden.
Yeah, I think if you got him in some of the deeper formats, like the 30 plus roster spot leagues, you know, the tight end premium super flex rosters where the waiver wire is really thin, then I would hold him there. But I think outside of that, yes. From at Joe Day 27, a very deep league where he's contending, currently 6-1, and it's full PPR. Trade away Julio in an early 2021 third and second for Keenan Allen.
Yeah, this is one I think we might disagree a little bit. I think I'd hold Julio if you're contending. I think he's I don't know. I'm kind of changing my answer on the fly here as a but I guess part of me thinks that I don't want to give up the picks to make a somewhat lateral move from Julio to Keenan Allen. And I'm having a tough time valuing, you know, the next 2 to 3 seasons, Keenan versus Julio. So I kind of lean the Julio side and keeping the picks, but obviously Justin Herbert, as you put in your notes in the dynasty ranks, has done wonders for Keenan Allen.
Yeah, this is not a lateral move in my opinion. Keenan Allen is getting elite volume with Herbert, and he's a couple years younger than Jones. Jones, you're not going to be able to get off of soon. Now, that doesn't mean that Jones can't produce for the next 3 years. He can't outproduce Allen. He totally could. He does look like one of these guys is going to be an outlier wide receiver. But I don't like to be in a position where I have to be right on that type of thing. And so with Allen, I get the chance to reevaluate and potentially trade off him next year or the year after much more easily than I can with Jones. And I really like Allen's ability this year to put up a ton of points.
Yeah, I guess then my brain just has a tough time. Yeah, I usually lean the optionality of having the picks if I think it's close. But I will note we have Keenan Allen, wide receiver 6, 13th overall in our rest of season ranks, like a really big jump. And then we have Julio Jones, 24th overall, wide receiver 12. So we do have it as an upgrade, not as a directly lateral move for just this season.
Yeah, and long term, I think it's not a lateral move either. So you're increasing your ability to contend, and you're increasing the value of the long-term asset. You're adding some picks for that, right? But you're not giving up a first, so there's limited downside to what you're really giving up here. I love this trade. I think I put in the notes, I think it's both like a fair trade by the value, but also a deal that feels like a huge win to me for the Keenan side. So you're not like ripping the guy off, but I just think it's a trade that makes a lot of sense. I would definitely go ahead and make that deal. And part of the reason is the format that he lays out, this very deep 4 flex, 2 tight end, 3 wide receiver league. You can't ride Julio to 0 there.
Yeah, I guess not, but your picks are also more valuable in a league like that too.
They are. That's definitely true. Your picks are, but if you're giving up a late second, trade Julio in early 21, I guess it's an early 2022 second, maybe. Although
it's an early 2021 third, and then it's, you know, just an
up and then a generic
2022 second.
Yeah. So you are giving up a more value, but even in a league like this, that early 2021 third, and that's going to be kind of a lottery ticket type of pick in terms of getting production out of it. And the 2022 second, who knows where it's going to land. Doesn't vest for a couple years. So yes, you're giving up something of value, but I think the bigger value is to have the stability of one of those guys you're going to be starting every single week. You do not want to lose a guy like Julio's value when you need to fill this many starting roster spots. Let's move.
Stop disrespecting Julio. That's it.
No, I mean, Julio's he's obviously going to have a good rest of the season. He looked great last night, but I mean, he's eventually going to turn.
Wiggins is convinced that the hammy's going to go and he's going to miss at least a couple games rest of the season.
All right. All right. Well, think about his trade value after Higgins' prediction comes true. Let's go to at Wahoo's Rule 1, 10-team PPR league. He's contending. Give up Christian McCaffrey, Mike Davis, and Jerry Jeudy for Miles Sanders, DJ Moore, and T. Higgins.
I like this trade a lot. I think I mean, there's part of me that if I'm giving up McCaffrey, maybe wants a package of picks and whatnot involved. But as we've gone in depth on T. Higgins already, you know, we view that as a mid to early first, basically. You know, Pat has it as an early first. I have a mid to early first. That's a pretty valuable pick. We think DJ Moore coming into the year was one of the top wide receiver dynasty assets. I think a lot of what's happened with DJ Moore has been overblown. In your last update, you still had him wide receiver 8. The volume's there. He's being used in a way that's a little more volatile. It's not necessarily worse long term. I think he's just more volatile, and you know, he's run bad on some of it so far. So I think those are two great assets. And then the CMC versus Miles Sanders is probably a little bit closer than you think. So I think you're doing well here picking up an extra player that's a really valuable asset because of the name recognition on McCaffrey and Judy, where McCaffrey and Sanders closer than you think, Judy and T. Higgins, you're closer than you think. And then, you know, DJ Moore, you're just getting for free basically, because who cares about Mike Davis and Dynasty?
Yeah, you're getting almost a free DJ Moore. It's not quite that much, but I'm in complete agreement. I think that the Judy is closer to Higgins. The CMC is closer to Sanders, who was getting used like a total workhorse before it went down. And if that offense improves a little bit with Rager, now they found Fulgham, it could start to be an offense where you really do want to have the workhorse running back, and it's a very valuable asset. Things change pretty quickly at running back, and Sanders, just in his second year, is going to be a pretty valuable dynasty asset here going forward. So I really like this one. I would definitely take the DJ Moore side there. Oh, and I'll also note that, you know, Curtis Samuel now looking like he might have some value, but he is in his last year. So from a dynasty perspective, I wouldn't even worry about him potentially emerging a little bit down
the Curtis track. Samuel also helping you tank in this quarantine auction by giving points to Davis Maddock's team.
Davis Maddock has gotten Cedric Wilson. He's gotten Curtis Samuel. There's just a new guy every week that blows
up. He's running so bad. He's got so Davis and Pat are both tanking in this league, and right now Pat's winning the race to the top pick, even though Davis's team is the worst team ever assembled.
Well, my team has something to say about that.
We have another Sanders question next, and I want to hear your running back rebuilding rant, because you've got a note, and I'm not sure what the rant is, but the question's from Tom Decato. Dynasty, I'm in a full-on rebuild. My Miles Sanders or their Justin Jefferson?
Yeah, I would take the Sanders side here, and I guess the running back rant that I noted to myself to do here is that there's, I think sometimes with rebuilding teams, like, a desire to avoid to have too much of an aversion from pieces that are going to have short-term value and only go for guys with long-term value. Like, I don't think there are many fantasy managers out there who would take Miles Sanders or put that player less than Justin Jefferson in their ranks right now. Right. Like, maybe I'm just on an island with this, but I just feel like Sanders is kind of the clear-cut, more valuable asset. And, you know, keep Sanders. He's saying my Miles Sanders are their Justin Jefferson. So he's probably been offered Justin Jefferson for Miles Sanders by a savvy owner who's like, hey, this guy looks like a long-term stud. I get the running back who's going to help me more. Miles Sanders is going to be plenty valuable next year, probably more valuable next year than he is right now. And he's one of these running backs who looks like they could potentially emerge as a workhorse running back who's actually talented on a good offense. That all might not happen. He might not get used as much like a workhorse as he did before the injury. The Eagles offense has struggled pretty badly at times. Maybe that'll continue to be the case, but there are signs of hope there. So to me, I'm just like, don't let someone take this really, really high ceiling asset from you. Not that Justin Jefferson isn't also a high ceiling guy, but I think Sanders has that ceiling to where it's pretty easy to imagine him being drafted in the top five of dynasty startups even next season. So heading into 2021, he could be a top five dynasty asset depending on how the rest of the season breaks. And Justin Jefferson, with the state of wide receiver just being really deep right now, and with Adam Thielen very unlikely, you know, to get cut, so he will be there next year. Justin Jefferson just does not have that kind of short-term ceiling, and that ceiling is so massive. When you get a guy who can be a top five asset in dynasty, you can really start to name your price.
Yeah, and I had a similar experience. I'm in a team where I did a full-on rebuild, and God, my team's awful. And I almost made, you know, sort of a bad trade last offseason where I had the pick to get Jonathan Taylor. And, you know, luckily I kind of held fast and I just took Jonathan Taylor as the guy that has this long-term upside. And I'm glad I did it because I was thinking, okay, this isn't going to be a quick rebuild. I can't have a running back be my main piece, but now I'm going to have a lot of options over the next offseason to either keep Taylor again or maybe make a more fortunate deal. So I'm with you. I would take Sanders. I wouldn't mind Jefferson if, you know, I got Jefferson and a good pick or something, like, you know, a more robust package, depending on how deep the league is. The deeper the league, the more I like getting multiple pieces. But in a vacuum, definitely give me Sanders.
Yeah, and certainly you could trade off of Sanders for a pick that or for a package that includes Jefferson. I like Jefferson a lot. He's really high in my ranks, but straight up, I think it just has to be Sanders, regardless of where you're at. We got a question here from at What's the Diff 2 that says Keyshawn Vaughn or Ronald Jones. This guy's trolling me, right, Mike?
He's trolling you. He's trolling you. He's got to be.
Well, it's Ronald Jones. Okay, moving to at Mike Singh. Who would be a good target for Michael Thomas, or are you optimistic to hold? I held him through our trade deadline in this quarantine auction where I'm tanking. I just felt like his value right now is kind of at a low point. What would you have done in my shoes, Mike, or in Mike's shoes here? Would you be willing to hold Michael Thomas?
So I kind of thought you should have traded Michael Thomas or maybe explored it a little. I don't know what trade talks you got into. Maybe I'm just bitter you didn't trade me Michael Thomas for Saquon Barkley, but that's okay. I got DeAndre Swift instead. So
yeah, pretty nice.
I think if I were you, in our league too, again, there's that dynamic of if you had traded Michael Thomas, you might have basically insured yourself as the number one pick overall. I don't know if that's a huge deal, number one versus number two. It's clearly going to be one of those two.
I'm just counting on Davis to keep shooting himself in the foot every week.
So, but this guy says he's one game out of first, who's asking the question. So, you know, wouldn't you... I'm kind of confused as to, so is he buying Michael Thomas or asking if he should hold him?
He's saying, are you optimistic to hold Michael Thomas, or who would be a good target to trade away Michael Thomas?
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. I misread it. Yeah. I feel like if this guy's contending, I would hold Michael Thomas. You know, the ceiling's incredible on him. It sounds like he was close this week. He's going to be back next week. I know it's always hard to deal with the risk when you're contending, but if you've contended this long without Michael Thomas, I think adding him to your lineup is going to be a smash. I mean, maybe if you could, you know, Ridley, you've got ranked really high. Maybe you don't sacrifice a ton of short-term value and you feel a little bit safer long-term value. But in general, I don't think I'm trading Michael Thomas 1v1 for anything if I'm already contending and I get to add Michael Thomas basically for free next week.
Yeah, I'm holding Michael Thomas. I think especially like in the league that we're in, there's like all these like receiving bonuses and stuff that I was looking at before the season that Michael Thomas, like what he did is just, it's more valuable than really like Christian McCaffrey. So In that specific league too, I'm just like, I just am so loath to trade Michael Thomas away for anything but peak value. And I think that it's just, no one's going to give you peak value for him right now because it's been kind of a disaster. So it's not been any kind of major injuries. I think we'll eventually see Michael Thomas back being Michael Thomas. And I would be holding him, especially if I was on the playoff bubble. I don't think at that point, I think you're just kind of getting cute. You're just getting a little frustrated maybe. Okay. At J_Rube15, he's got an all in roster that had Barkley. And he's looking to trade Barkley, or maybe he already did, for Ronald Jones, TJ Hockenson, and Hollywood Brown.
I think I'm in this league.
And I should say it's a two quarterback, two tight end deep best ball league.
Yes. I am in this league. Me and Dink have a team in this league. Not a very well managed team, but we are in this league, one of Britt Devine's fantasy leagues. I kind of think I would have held Barkley until the off season and tried to sell him for more, like while he wasn't hurt, if you wanted to get a bigger package, which I have seen Rube's team, you know, he probably does need to get a pretty big package because, you know, there's not a lot to work with when you're all in on a couple of really high end running backs and one of them gets hurt and, you know, the rest of your roster starts to age. I guess for me, you're higher on Hockenson than me. I know you really like Hockenson. I'm worried that the two tight end stuff, sometimes people overrate the tight ends in those leagues where, you know, obviously the scarcity of the position gets cut very quickly, but there's only so many guys that are really strong fantasy assets at tight end that, I don't know, I feel like sometimes these guys that are in the mid tier right now, Hockenson, of course, does have some ceiling. They end up a little bit overvalued. And then, you know, Hollywood's really stable, good. I don't know. It just feels a little bit light for me for Barkley, but maybe I'm overvaluing Barkley still.
Yeah, I liked the Hockenson Hollywood Rojo side. Nice of you to say that's because I'm high on Hockenson that I liked this side of the deal.
I was cutting you some slack.
No, I think it is Hockenson that's driving me towards it. And maybe it is me overvaluing a little bit in a two tight end league, but if you've got Hockenson, I think, does have an elite ceiling. So that is making it pretty interesting for me. And then Hollywood Brown, I think, is a little bit undervalued right now. He's seeing really nice volume, and the offense just isn't really clicking. So, you know, in best ball, it's kind of a cliche, right? But he is like one of those guys who really is better in best ball.
Yeah, the target share is great. You know, the volume at some point, you know, overall for the team, you think will scale upwards.
And I think Ronald Jones is better in best ball too. Like he's going to, a lot of his value going forward is going to be touchdown related and just finding himself in the right game scripts to where he can get enough early down work to really deliver value. And it's going to be pretty frustrating to have him in managed leagues because you're going to head into a game like they're heading into the Giants and you're thinking, okay, this is going to be pretty clearly a game where they can dominate and Ronald Jones can get his, but he's going to fail in some spots like that. He's going to have unexpected value in some other spots. So overall, I think he makes a little bit more sense in one of these kind of deep best ball scenarios too. So I don't know. I don't mind it given that he's contending, trying to pivot on the fly. I thought he got a fair amount of value back. And you can see like if Hollywood Brown finally starts connecting on some of these, he could gain a lot of value. TJ Hockenson obviously has a big value ceiling. So it's not like he's trading for pieces. Like Ronald Jones, I don't think will be a hugely valuable trade asset, but you should be able to make more trades.
I should point out too, I kind of glossed over that he's contending. I was thinking, you know, this was something that long-term he probably needs to tear down, but he's in second place in this league right now. So I kind of had glossed over that a little bit. So he has to make a deal now, basically. So it makes more sense to me. I misunderstood the context at first when I said, you know, hold Barkley to the offseason. Obviously, he's got to trade Barkley now. So I think it's about even, I guess, is where I'm at.
That makes sense. All right, just a couple more questions here. We've got at Eddie Martin 19, who is kind of asking a little bit of a generic question about FFPC leagues. And these dynasty leagues, they're tight end premium, but you have a cut down where you cut down to 14 players in the offseason. And he's asking about moving guys like Daryl Henderson and Evan Ingram, who aren't really helping him that much now. I think it makes a lot of sense to move those types of players if you can package them up in FFPC, because in FFPC leagues with this 14 player cut down, that's so small. It's almost like an extended keeper league. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have many roster spots. And so you should always be looking for spots to move value into to a smaller amount of players. And I think like guys like if you could get onto J.K. Dobbins, if you could get onto guys like DeAndre Swift and Antonio Gibson, where FFPC tends to really value running backs, but it's also a league where it can be tough to sit and wait on guys. So if you're able to package up Ingram or package up Henderson and get one of those running backs who look like they have a really bright future. That makes a lot of sense. And I also like Dallas Goedert as a tight end premium target.
Yeah, this is, you know, one of those formats where you really have to be cognizant of how are you winning your league? And it's going to be through having, you know, a core set of premium players. It's not going to be through tremendous depth because of that cut down being only 14 players. And I think it's okay to even give up a little bit of value, especially as you said, it's not really helping your team anyways, this extra depth. You can make a trade that's going to look pretty good to someone now if you're willing to be a little bit early on those guys you mentioned. You know, Dobbins, Swift. I'm really high on Swift and Gibson right now as guys that like have started to break out, but I don't think have scratched the surface of the ceiling quite yet. At least I see it higher than the market probably sees it if they're, you know, just holding their current role steady.
Yeah, I think Swift is just an amazing ad right now. Someone that has all he needs some things to break his way, but another one of those guys who looks like he could be a potentially a top five dynasty asset in the near future, because we know he can get used to the goal line. We know he's a talented, high draft capital running back who can catch passes. And now Kerryon Johnson looking like he's not going to be a threat long term. Adrian Peterson's eventually going to be out of the picture. Potentially a new coaching staff who might have a different philosophy about, you know, being more willing to ride him. So he could even, he doesn't need to be a workhorse. He can kind of get there in the Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara type of role. But there's even the potential if they bring in a new coaching staff that he emerges into like a Christian McCaffrey type of workhorse role. So I think, you know, he's expensive right now, but he is like a buy high candidate. And I think the trade you made for him makes a lot of sense. The last question here also involves Antonio Gibson, so we can talk a little bit more about him. This is from, I don't know, I just like this handle for some reason, at Rojo Sizen, 27-man roster, 12-team PPR Superflex League. Give Joe Burrow, Philip Lindsay to get Jonathan Taylor, Antonio Gibson, and Sam Darnold. He does have some other quarterbacks in Matthew Stafford, Ryan Tannehill, and Jimmy G, but notes that it's a tough time to try and sell Burrow just because it looks like he could be one of the next stars in Superflex.
Yeah, I like this deal for you. I think Jonathan Taylor is, you know, he's a round one startup guy next year pretty easily, I think. And Antonio Gibson, we just went through why we're really high on him. So to get these two guys for a quarterback, you're still getting, you know, I almost look at it as you're free rolling Darnold a little bit in this deal. You know, to trade Burrow for JT and Gibson, Lindsay's basically a throw in, right? I mean, at this point, he's very little dynasty value. So I almost look at it as Burrow for JT and Gibson. I almost like JT and Gibson straight up on that. I think people sometimes panic too much in super flex leagues on the quarterback value. You know, I was in leagues this past offseason that had JT ahead of Burrow in startup drafts. So at the very least, you know, they're probably pretty close. I think they've both shown positive signs. JT with the pass catching and Burrow, you know, just looks like he's going to be a stud overall. So I like the JT Gibson side, and then you free roll Darnold trade value. And he's got a roster where he can very easily free roll that because he's got Matt Stafford, Ryan Tannehill, and Jimmy Garoppolo. So it's not like he's going to have to panic, make a bad move to get a quarterback back. You know, he's got guys to fill, especially if this is non-best ball where you're labeling your starting roster. It's not like you need four quarterbacks deep, you know, having three that are starting each week's plenty when you have to dictate who the two starters are.
Yeah, I think it's a great strategy in best ball to try to get four quarterbacks, but once you do, if a move like this becomes available, then make it. And then try to find another way to get backfill that fourth quarterback position with someone cheap who can kind of, you're trying to farm that fourth quarterback for trade value, but you don't feel the need that like you're panicking, like even if there's an injury to Jimmy G or whatever, you still have enough quarterbacks to use yourself. So I think this is a great trade. I agree. I think you're basically treating Darnold as kind of a free roll piece here. And then even if you treat him as free, you're also sort of treating Burrow as like a top five super flex asset, which I don't think he is. And the reason is that I don't know that Burrow has that elite ceiling at quarterback. He might, but I think the the thing that's more exciting about Burrow is that he looks good. We know that you're going to have him for a long time. He's going to be just a super, super safe asset that you're going to be starting every week. And there's a lot of value in that. But there's also a ton of value in getting two running back studs. And there's a good chance that you get that back in Taylor and Gibson. Gibson, like, he's behind JD McKissick. Gibson's a converted wide receiver. Eventually, he's going to catch passes. They're just bringing him along. I think this is a perfect time to get Antonio Gibson. I think he's literally got the coaching staff that just used Christian McCaffrey at a record-setting pace. So they're totally willing to use Gibson like a workhorse if he can work up to that level of trust. And I think the fact that he's being used so much on the early downs is incredibly bullish, given that that's actually the thing we're more worried about with him.
Yeah, I feel like it's this weird thing in people's minds where because he's pass catching on early downs, people aren't fully realizing that there's still growth potential there. You know, I almost think they'd realize it more if he wasn't pass catching on early downs. They'd be like, oh, well, if he gets the third down roll from the Kissick, but now they kind of see, oh, 10% target share, you know, that's okay. And they kind of move on. Well, no, 10% target share plus the 15% McKissick's getting, that's Christian McCaffrey, you know, and obviously we don't think he's going to get quite that much, but you know, the math there is, it's not that insane to get there. If at some point in time, they just let him fully take over.
Yeah. Gibson's another buy high candidate for me. And this is not high. You're actually getting him at a discount. So, Rojo Sisson, go ahead and make that trade. You just seem like a kind of overall great guy. So we'll leave it there. And you follow us on Twitter at Two Hats One Mike and at Pat Crane. Check out all of our stuff at Establish the Run. And we'll see you next week.